to the April 18, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for participating and remind you to please mute your screens and silence any electronic devices that you may have with you today. Today's meeting is a study and business session with the study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. In the afternoon, business sessions starting at 1 p.m., depending upon how we do with our agenda today. It was a tough goal to find out that Ann can run a more efficient meeting than myself. Last meeting ended, everything finished in the morning, so we'll see how we do today. Like to remind, to welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or on the screen in the Zoom meeting or the Teams meeting. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present, Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Charles Van Reese will be sitting in for Eric, and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board, are all in attendance. Please, my pleasure to welcome Brian Bjorklund in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minutes. So Brian, it's good to see you.
Morning.
Here today, so go ahead.
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Brian. I usually see you on the basketball or volleyball court, so
that's
good
right.
To see you. Welcome today.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. So my name is Brian Bjorklund. I'm a senior system operator, also the outage coordinator out in System Ops. I'm just here for a quick safety minute this morning. Since April is Work Zone Awareness Month, that's what I'm going to speak on. So had the occasion to drive up to Brewster last week. Ran into two separate road work spots that caused me to be almost late for a track meet. So this is great timing. So first, pay attention to what's going on around you, especially as you get up to a work zone and you see it. No, that's not the time to fiddle with your cell phone or even change the channel on your radio. Number two, slow down. Obviously, there's people out and about working. There's going to be other drivers that aren't paying attention that may not be slowing down as much as they should be. So you can kind of have an effect on others as well by doing that. Going a safe speed. Don't tailgate people. Don't be in a hurry. You'll get through it just like everybody else will. And before you leave, just kind of expect delays, especially this time of year. You know, there's work everywhere for utility crews, road crews, all kinds of different crews. Just expect it. So plan a few minutes extra and keep everybody safe. That's all I've got for you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Great safety minute, great reminders for all of us. So I appreciate that immensely. Good to see you here today. Any other comments, commissioners? All right. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay, commissioners, staff have recommended resolution items 11 for the consent agenda. For the public's information, items on the consent agenda are also subject to transfer back to the regular agenda upon any request of commissioners. Changes to the agenda?
Just a clarification?
Yes.
We recommended items 11 through 14?
Is that not what I said, Kurt?
I thought I just heard 11.
Oh, 11 through 14. I have 11 through 14 on my notes. So thank you.
Yep.
I didn't Great. So any other changes, 11 through 14 on the consent agenda? Commissioners, any other changes? All right. Agenda stands as modified. All right. So, Kirk, let's go ahead and start with item number 3.
Great. Thank you. I'm honored to recognize one of our engineers, actually an electrical engineer down at Rock Island Dam, Josh Mandoli. He does a lot of different things down at Rock Island, and one of the interesting things about Josh as an electrical engineer is he takes great interest in things beyond electrical engineering, including mechanical systems. And unfortunately, Josh wasn't able to join us today, and he preferred that we go on without him, so I'm hoping he's listening to the recording at some point. But Josh was involved in a project down at Rock Island Powerhouse, too, and became inquisitive on some things he was seeing on some of the piping and valving of a carbon seal water system that helps keep water from the turbine coming up through the shaft, and started asking a bunch of questions about the system, and actually resulted in part of our engineering team redesigning the system in a way that would actually have a material impact on the reliability to the positive side and future maintenance of the critical system. So I would say this is just another example of one of our employees that is exhibiting the human performance improvement principles and looking at things through the lens of curiosity and with a questioning attitude, and asked questions that resulted in a better system when all is said and done. So just extremely proud of Josh, and I know he has gotten involved in some very complicated projects down at Rock Island and is very detail-oriented, and just a pleasure to have on our team. So, Josh, if you are listening in at some point in the recording, thank you for what you're doing and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Josh. I'll check here.
Steve, I'd like to make just a comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kirk used what I consider a very special word when it comes to qualities in an employee in this capacity, and that's curiosity. And I think that curiosity factor is huge in making us better, always asking the why question and researching that. So I give this CPO winner a double thumbs up for exhibiting that. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy, and I agree that self-learning leads into organizational learning, which leads into human performance improvements across the organization. So appreciate that, and everybody's reinforcing that, and Kirk, that should make you smile.
Yep.
All right. So let's move on to item number 4 with our customer satisfaction survey kickoff.
Great. So we have a guest today as we begin to embark on a customer satisfaction survey that we've done over the years. I'd like to turn it over to John Stoll and Alex Dunn from Strategies 360.
Thanks, Kirk. Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. As Kirk has mentioned, it's every other year we do our customer satisfaction survey, so we're back. I will introduce Alex Dunn in a minute, but just a little bit of background. 2 years ago, we delayed the survey a little bit due to COVID. It was just made sense to push it out a little bit deeper into the year. For this cycle, we're getting back to our normal calendar schedule. So this, again, is on the balance for the district performance plan. Our goal is we seek to learn about what's on our customer's mind, as well as a 90% customer satisfaction rating. And what that breaks out is people who rate us on a 1 to 5 scale, 5 being the highest, that the fours and fives totaled together are 90% or greater. So that's our goal. I believe you've seen the questions, but there's an opportunity if there are any feedback or any adjustments we want to make. We do have some time, but we do hope to get this out in the field by the end of this month. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Alex, who will talk a little bit about the methodology and approach that Strategies 360 we use.
Thanks, John. It's really nice to be here with everyone today. My name is Alex Dunn. I am a survey researcher at Strategies 360. And we worked alongside Chelan PUD in 2020 to conduct the last customer satisfaction survey. We do a lot of other work with Washington-based PUDs and other utilities across the West. And we've worked, for example, with Grant PUD for a number of years now on their satisfaction surveys and a number of other projects to analyze the way that customers are thinking through their relationships with their utility. We are really pleased to be, thank you, that's perfect. And I think on the next slide, we just have a really quick overview of what we wanted to cover, just a couple minutes by way of an introduction this year. Like John said, our goals for the survey are to check in on a few benchmark questions that have long been established in these satisfaction surveys for the PUD along the lines of overall satisfaction, but also satisfaction on a couple of different key dimensions, like reliability of power service, like affordability, as well as interactions with customer service, and then some questions generally about PUD outreach and connecting with residents. There will also be a handful of new questions covering more relevant subject matter or more recently relevant subject matter. So it'll be kind of a combination of old and new, but really designed to check in on where your residential customers are after a couple years that have been pretty tumultuous. So I think it will be an especially important check-in, as we've seen with a number of our other clients as well. Our approach to methodology has been to really focus on representativeness. In 2020, we were able to collect more responses across the county by a significant margin than what the county had been able to collect prior to 2020. And we did that mainly by providing as many means as possible for residents to engage with the survey, from landline and cell phone interviews to email-based interviews, and also via text message. So that just ensures that the survey makes it out to every corner of the county and that it's as representative as possible based on the best data that we have available to us. The key in the past for us for accuracy has been representativeness. So we hope to build on that foundation from 2020 again this year. Just a quick note on timing. As John said, we're working with him and Neil on putting together the questions now, and it's likely that we'll be collecting data in early May and be back in front of you with an update on the results sometime after that. So stay tuned, and happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Commissioners, any comments or questions for Alex?
Just because my curiosity drives me, Alex, I went online at the beginning of your presentation and discovered that you live in Colorado. I mean,
I do.
I'm amazed in the world of Microsoft Teams and Zoom what we're able to do these days. And so when that presentation finally does come to the board, I'm assuming we'll be meeting in person. Will you be coming out for that presentation?
I think that is up to the those with a higher pay grade than me at the PUD, but I'm happy to do it. And I've done that often in Chelan. I spend a lot of time in Washington State because our company is headquartered there, even though I live in Denver. So we will find, whatever the commission's preference is, we'll certainly work with that.
Okay. I look forward to the results.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Anyone else?
Just a comment. I really appreciate, one of the goals, just kind of take a look at where our customers are following, the COVID situation that we've been through. And what really I think brought that to mind is recently for another organization, I've been reviewing high school scholarship applications. And I would say 7 out of 10 of the high school applications I have read, these are high-powered students. The effect on COVID, the effect of COVID on them academically, socially, et cetera, has been, I see it profoundly reflected in their scholarship applications. And these are scholarship applications from our customers. These are children of our customers. And so it'll be interesting to see if we can, where our needs are. Because reading those scholarship applications, if I were still back in the building, with the responsibility of that building, well, that's information I'd really want to know in terms of how to structure my student school year and my staff's response to kids. And I can't imagine that we're not going to have something in some way similar with their parents as customers. But reading through it, it was heart-rending. Kind of what has occurred in the turmoil of those young people's minds and self-perceptions and goals and et cetera. So I think this could be really revealing for us and help us serve much better.
Yeah, and I can just respond really briefly to that. I think that's a great point. We've seen it throughout our research in communities, regardless of state and size of community. And on the economic front as well, there's certainly a huge learning component. We will include a couple of questions in this survey designed to get a sense of how people's economic circumstances have changed and how that may affect their relationship with the PUD, and also, maybe make some basic guesses about some of the questions that you raised as well. So obviously it will be pretty narrowly focused on the PUD, but I think your point is very well taken about the ripple effects throughout.
Yeah. Well, and I received a number of phone calls, from our customers after our, what we call Snowmageddon, and the downturn in the economy, COVID, et cetera, just really trying to understand where they were economically in relationship to their paying their bills. Prideful people who have always paid their bills, for the first time, not being able to, have the monetary access to do that, and what it did to them in terms of their feelings of shamefulness and value, personal value. And I think, as an example in the area of customer service, hopefully this will give us a line of sight on what is that we can do. And I know customer service really, really worked hard to, amend people's feelings and try to give them a cushion. But it's tough time. So there are just a combination of things in there that we may see reflected this time that we haven't seen before. And they weren't necessarily unhappy with us. It was an unhappiness that just overflowed when they got their bill. You couldn't get meter readers out to read the meters. And all of a sudden you've got this bill that looks different than it's looked before, et cetera. So anyway, thanks for listening to me.
Thanks, Dennis. Okay, anything else for Alex? I think as we conclude this, Alex and John, the one thing that I continue to hear over and over and over when I talk to our customer owners is the outreach that we do, listening, you know, asking the questions, asking for their opinion. Huge benefit in building trust and social capital in our organization. So thank you very much. And Alex, you took me back 40 years. I was a sociology major in college and studied to do what you're doing. But unfortunately, at that point, we didn't have technology. You stood in the mall and took surveys, and I didn't want to do that. So I know what it takes to do your work, to study about behavior of people and their needs. And it is huge, and I appreciate it. So thank you very much, and look forward to the continued work by you and John. So thank you very much, guys.
Thanks. Looking forward to it.
Okay, let's move into the quarterly board balance scorecard, and this is our item. So, commissioners, you know the drill. Let's quickly walk through that and get through our evaluation and record keeping of ourselves, how we're doing. So we'll start off with Ann.
Yeah, I'm just bringing it up on my desktop. As we've agreed upon, last couple of years, we do this report by exception, and it looks to me like one exceptional item that shows up in pink, not in compliance, is board attendance at Tri-Commission regional stakeholder meetings. Three times per year, update based on information from our information that we give to Rebecca. Our target is 75%. Our actual is 60%. However, these are the results through the first quarter only. So it's just a reporting issue, and so I think we'll be fine. I suspect we'll be right on target.
Great. Thank you, Ann. Mm-hmm. Okay. And as I look at, let's just zip through this by name. So go ahead, and I do not see where we have any other exceptions. We seem to be green in all areas. Commissioners, or is there anything you want to review or say? Looks like we're in pretty good shape. All right. With that said, turn my phone off and not my watch. Thank you. Apologize for that. I'm not sure I even know how to do that. Okay.
I can take this intro if you want.
Let's see, where are we at? Yes, we're on number six, quarterly fish. So go ahead, Kirk.
Yep.
Sorry for the interruption.
No worries. Agenda item number six is a quarterly fish and wildlife update. And with us in the boardroom, we've got Aline Underwood, Lance Keller, and Vaughn Pope.
Good morning, commissioners. This is Aline Underwood, Manager of Fish and Wildlife for the PUD. I just want to say thanks again for continuing to allow us to come to you about once a quarter. We really enjoy the opportunity to share what our folks are working on, some of the things that you hear about and other things maybe you're not so familiar with. So today we've got Lance Keller, who's going to give an update on our sub-yearling behavior study. And then Vaughn Pope, who's going to give an update on some new things happening at the Home Water Preserve. Lance?
Thank you, Elaine. Good morning, commissioners. Lance Keller, Senior Fisheries Biologist with the district. Pleasure to be in front of you, as always. Here to talk a little bit, like Elaine said, about our sub-yearling efforts that we're doing down at Rock Island, kind of what we've done in the past and what we're looking to do in 2022, some of which you're already aware of via the approval of a resolution back in March. So currently, this is kind of where we stand from a fish survival perspective at Rock Island. I won't touch on this too much because we've brought this many times, but the real key thing here is that we've met all the survival standards for spring migrating species, salmon and steelhead. But what about sub-yearlings? Sub-yearlings are on the list. Sub-yearlings are definitely a little more unique when it comes to fish passage at Rock Island, and I will say at Rocky Reach. And there's three main things that we'd really like to highlight in what makes sub-yearlings so unique. The first off is that subureolians can express multiple life histories. And what I mean by this is when they start actually out-migrating to the ocean, some can go very fast, similar to yearling species or spring migrating species. Others can take some time to conduct the same journey. And then others can just stop and overwinter in a specific location and then choose to out-migrate the following spring. This is very challenging when you are looking to conduct a survival study. We cannot determine when we have these fish in hand at the Rock Reach Juvenile Fish Bypass Sampling Facility what life history that fish is going to embark on. It's a lot of it's environmental, some of it's just some what their parents did. But this time, we are not able scientifically to have the fish in hand and say, okay, this fish is going to move, this fish is not. And that ties into the following two bullets, the second one being the active tag limitations. These fish are smaller fish than the yearling Chinook and sockeye and steelhead that out-migrate in the springtime, so therefore we need to actually implant a smaller transmitter to not actually invoke an effect of the presence of that transmitter. Essentially, you can think of it as hiking up a hill with a 20-pound backpack versus an 80-pound backpack. The 80-pound backpack, you're definitely going to feel on your journey more than you are the 20-pound backpack, and you might actually go at a different rate or perform a little differently. At the same time, when you shrink the transmitter, the battery has to shrink as well. So therefore, the time that the transmitter is actually sending out its signal is drastically shortened. That, thinking back to the previous point about the life history and whether these fish slow down or speed up, can make them problematic because the transmitter could actually die before the fish interacts with the actual project area, and in this case, Rock Island Dam. And that leads to the third point. It actually introduces a bias into the survival calculations and just the general behavior assessments of subureolian Chinook at the Rock Island project or any other project on the hydro-Columbia or the hydro system in the Columbia River, excuse me. Essentially, these are presence-absence evaluations, ones and zeros, when it goes to the reporting and the evaluation. And so if the fish doesn't show up, there's not a lot we can say about it just based pretty much just where it was last detected. In this case, we would release it and never detect the fish again down at Rock Island, but it could be surviving and be overwintering in the confluence of the Wenatchee River system and the Columbia River as an example. So all those prove as some difficulties when actually evaluating subureolian fish. But at the same time, there are some benefits to actually the PUD embarking on evaluations of subureolians. It is holding true to our commitment that we signed up for in the HCP. Subureolian Chinook are a planned species in the HCP, so our signatories do expect us to evaluate those fish when it is appropriate from a scientific and lack of bias. And there is also an ongoing evaluation of the changing technology and methodologies. We are seeing the transmitter drastically shrink in size. The hurdles are still present, but they are getting a little bit shorter to overcome. And then why this really does roll up to why we need to do it and why it's beneficial to the district to do it at Rock Island is the only way we can ensure that we're essentially providing the appropriate amount of fish spill at Rock Island Dam is by having a mountain of data in hand on what subureolians are doing at the vicinity of the project, how they're passing the project, how long they're taking to pass the project, whether they're approaching on one bank and then actually passing on the adjacent bank on the other side. And we don't know that unless we actually start tagging some fish and releasing them. So the current amount of spill that we're providing at Rock Island is outlined in the HCP, and any opportunity to adjust that one way or the other would have to come from a data source that we are currently amassing. So we actually did conduct a study in 2021, as we've highlighted previously with the Board of Commissioners. We utilized the existing detection equipment that was deployed for the 2021 Rock Island Yearling Chinook Confirmation Survival Study that was conducted in April through May of 2021. And we were able to release 606 subyearlings upstream of Rock Island Dam from June 28th through August 6th, 2021. And some brief results. I will caveat all these with highlighting the fact that, as everyone knows, Rock Island is a very unique project on the Columbia River system, one of the shortest reservoirs, and I would also say one of the more riverine-like reservoirs. So not a lot of water particles being held up. Water moves fairly quickly through the reservoir. That being said, we actually saw all of the tagged subureolians that were released in the Tailorista Rocky Reach actually move through the Rock Island Reservoir, which was a surprise to us. We actually were anticipating some fish holding up, and we had some additional surveys conducted to try to determine where those fish were residing, but they all moved and approached the Rock Island Dam project, which was a surprise to us. And at the same time, the routes that they selected to pass through Rock Island Dam, whether that be Powerhouse 2, Spillway 2 on the south end of the project, or Spillway 1, Powerhouse 1 on the north end of the project, were very similar to what we've observed in previous years when it comes to yearling Chinook route specific passage selection. So that was definitely interesting to note. We also found some uncertainties in our data set. Last year was a very unique operational year from a water perspective. We saw very strong flows late in the late spring, early summer, and they also persisted through the month of August. So we don't know if the route-specific selection that we saw was somehow influenced by those environmental characteristics or not. And also at the same time, all of the releases were conducted upstream of Rock Island Dam, and then passage was evaluated into the Wampum Reservoir down to the Sunland and Crescent Bar area. And so the results that we assembled ultimately include some of the Wampum project area, the reservoir itself. And so we're not too clear if there's some predation element that's occurring in the tail risk of Rock Island Dam. And it was just mainly due to the limitations of the study design last year and the opportunistic approach that we took that we weren't able to determine that. And that is one of the uncertainties going forward. So what are we proposing to do in 2022? As I noted, we received Board of Commissioner approval on March 7, 2022 for this study that I'm going to talk about now. Our main hypothesis is that sub-yearling Chinook behavior and passage is directly correlated to Rock Island Dam operations. Once again, we only released 600 fish last year, so that sample size itself statistically limited us to actually compare some of the Powerhouse 1, Powerhouse 2 passage interactions we were seeing. So for 2022, we are proposing to collect, tag, release and observe sub-yearling Chinook, totaling 1,300 active tags, 900 of which will be released in the Rocky Reach tail race, and then 400 released in the Rock Island tail race. And that's one of the big changes for 2022 is we're actually conducting a release in the Rock Island tail race where we didn't in 2021. So hopefully you'll get some of those two uncertainties that I highlighted. And at the same time, we have been very clear with our HCP signatories that this is not a survival study. We've communicated that very clearly, and that we are ultimately not initiating formal HCP phase designation studies by embarking on this behavior and passage study at Rock Island Dam related to sub-yearlings. So as far as next steps go, in May, we'll actually start setting up the study area, tag sites, prepping for to detect these fish ultimately that we're going to release starting in mid-June through the first week of August. And then from September to December, we will be extracting the receivers, downloading the data. I've got noted here that we're expecting a little over a million detection points. I think that's a little underestimated. I think we're going to probably have 2.5 to 3 million detection points given the sample size. So we have lots of data points for our consultant to sift through. And then our consultant will prepare a report for our review and be finalized by the end of December 2022. And at that, I'll turn it over to Vaughn Pope for his portion of the presentation this morning.
Might want to pause and just see if there's any questions before we flip over to Vaughn.
Just the only question I have, could you remind me of the data that we've had in the past on that pathway through Rock Island, what we're seeing?
Yes, great question, Commissioner McKenna. So I do have that handy. Give me just a second to get to it. So we typically do see roughly 80% of, I'll use yearling Chinook because they are very similar to sub-yearlings as far as life history characteristics, as far as they are same from a genetic perspective, they're fairly similar. We see about 80% of those fish select a powerhouse passage route past Rock Island Dam. The majority of that does occur in Powerhouse 2 through the bulb turbines. Looking back at some of the data from the sub-yearling effort, we did see just shy of 70% of the tagged fish actually select Powerhouse 2 as a passage route. We also, as I mentioned, conducted that confirmation survival study on yearling Chinook, and I believe we saw 72% of those fish use Powerhouse 2 as a passage route. And the remainder of the fish do tend to favor Spillway 2 for a passage route. We definitely see the majority of yearling Chinook and sub-yearling Chinook approach Rock Island Dam on river right or on the south end of that project from the middle fish ladder exit to the bank on the right side of the river when you're facing downstream. And so once it seems the data does show at this point that once they select that route, they tend to stick to that side of the river and really don't have a tendency to cross from the powerhouse to powerhouse one side. So quite a bit of passage over in the over on the south end of the project, but at the same time, high turbine passage, and that has been seen in previous confirmation, previous HCP studies and confirmation survival studies that we've been able to meet the HCP survival standards in.
Thank you. Interesting.
Go with Gary. And then I'll ask.
Thank you. So I just happen to have a question as I'm listening to you talk. Would there be any benefit, since the fish are now selecting turbine 2 or powerhouse 2, is there any benefit to looking at a water slide type bypass similar to what we have at Rocky Reach? Would that make sense here since the majority of the fish are gravitating one location?
That's a great question, Commissioner Arsenal. And it's my understanding, I believe that's been briefly thought of over the last few years. Rock Island is the difference between Rocky Reach and Rock Island is Rock Island is a very low head dam in comparison to Rocky Reach. And the spill approach that we've taken to meet the HCP survival standards as evaluated under 20% spill and then again at 10% spill for yearling Chinook has proved to be very, very efficient and effective as a tool for us to meet our survival standards. So I think, you know, at this point, I think it's definitely from a cost perspective, I think spill might be the best approach at this point, given the fact that we do prioritize the majority of the fish spill we provide in that powerhouse, that spillway 2 section of the spillway and adjacent to powerhouse 2. And then at the same time, I will note that the bulb turbine route of passage at Rock Island is a very fish-friendly route as well, too. So we see very high survival given the fact that a large portion of our fish select powerhouse 2 as a route with the yearling and spring studies we've done. So we feel really good about the powerhouse 2 route, and at this point we don't feel it'd be advantageous to embark on a large capital project such as a water slide for fish passage specifically in that area. But very great question.
Good. Thank you very much.
If I could ask a couple questions. What is the attraction to Powerhouse 2? You know, because I know we create one at Rock Island, Rocky Reach. But what attracts the fish to that particular path, do we know?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do know. We actually do, during the months of April, May, June, July, and August, we do put a preference on Powerhouse 2 operation. And that is in part for fish passage, as well as the way that we have configured and altered some of the spill gates on Spillway 2. So we have some of the over and under gates and the notch gates positioned adjacent to the first unit in Powerhouse 2. So with the preference to run Powerhouse 2 and the majority of the water that makes its way through the Rock Island Dam as a whole going through Powerhouse 2, the fish just naturally follow that flow and through the powerhouse. So that would be my speculation as to why fish have a tendency to select Powerhouse 2 as the bulk of the passage. And once again, in the spring, we're only providing about 10% of the daily average river. Fraction? I'm sorry, what was that?
Excuse me for interrupting.
Oh, no.
Is that a water current attraction?
I believe so. We have not conducted 3D evaluations at Rock Island Dam as we have at Rocky Reach, but I think it's a fairly good assumption to make that is the attraction to the Powerhouse 2 area. And that's, once again, if we boost the sample size in 2022 as we intend, and we see some more a water year that causes more operation over on the Powerhouse 1 side, we have the resolution to detect those individual passage routes. We can go back, correlate them with operations, and then kind of see how what unit we have operating might lead fish to pass one way versus the other.
Okay. I was going to make a bad joke. I'll spare everybody. And then what is the half-life on tags? And then the second part of that question, follow-up, is at what points past our projects Is there are those tags red in other places, and do they last long enough to be red?
Yeah, very interesting question. So the first part of that, the tag life, the manufacturer of these tags, which are JSAT tags developed by PNNL, I believe the spec sheet calls out about 54 days of battery life. Now, I will say that is correlated with the river temp environment that they are operating in cold water temps, you're going to see a longer battery life, warmer temps. Okay. It's going to definitely shorten that. And we will be conducting this study in some warmer water temperatures. But at the same time, I will note that during the yearling Chinook confirmation survival study, I think we had some tag life that was 80 to 92 days. So the manufacturer definitely under-promised, over-delivered. So, and it seems to be, it's not a unique case with our project. We've reached out to other folks that have utilized this specific tag from this specific vendor, and we feel very confident that we're going to see a tag life that will suffice for that mid-June through August, and then the remaining monitoring of the fish passage season through the month of August at Rock Island Dam.
Okay.
Oh, yes, and downstream detection.
So
thank you.
Past our projects, are we getting any data back?
Yeah, so in order to detect this specific tag technology, other entities would have to have similar detection equipment deployed, and I do not believe any entity downstream has plans to do that. And at the same time, we do a bit of regional coordination just to make sure that these unique tag codes that were programming these tags to aren't overlapped with any other projects. So if there were to be a downstream effort, and we do have some fast-moving fish and they actually get in their project or study area, they don't have two tags now that are sending out the same signal. So as of right now, this is a Chelan PD sole effort to evaluate that, and we do not expect anyone downstream to be detecting our fish.
Okay, thank you. So do you want the bad joke?
Sure.
I just thought maybe our fish were smart enough to realize it was a French bulb serpent, but not a Cuisinart. But anyway.
I like it.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate being humored.
Okay, if there are no other questions, we'll turn it over to Vaughn Pope for the second part of this presentation. Thanks, Lance. And Lance is sticking around in case you think of other questions.
Good morning, Commissioners. Vaughn Pope, Senior Wildlife Biologist for the District. Here to give you an update on some potential modifications on the Home Water Preserve. So what is the Home Water Preserve? It's a Rock Island mitigation parcel that was purchased in 1990 for the Rock Island Project mitigation, primarily for the Powerhouse 2 construction and the construction of Kirby Billingsley and Confluence Parks. There was some habitat loss associated with all those efforts, and the district was required to go out and get mitigation. So the Home Water Preserve was the mitigation from 1990 to 2005. It sat relatively idle with a FERC requirement to maintain it as in its natural state. In 2005, the Chelan Douglas Land Trust approached the district for a permitted use to have a formal trail crossing the property about 2 miles that connected two trailheads, one just outside of Wenatchee near Fifth Street area, and that would connect to the Horse Lake Preserve area. So we went through a consultation process way back in 2005, 6, 7, and part of that process, the Department of Fish and Wildlife in particular was concerned about mule deer habitat. So a condition of that permit was to close the property from December 1 to March 31st annually, and the land trust and the permittee that we have, the permittee is actually the city of Wenatchee currently that holds the permit for that use, but the land trust administers that for the city. And as you know, the land trust has a lot of holdings in and around the foothill areas and has a lot of trail management activity in the community. So just a quick where in the upper left portion of this slide, you'll see Wenatchee off to the east part of the slide, the Wenatchee River off to the north, and then you see that red line running through that one parcel. That's the permitted portion of the Home Water Preserve for the Sage Hills Trail that goes from Day Drive in south south part of the slide near Number 1 Canyon up to Horse Lake Reserve area in green. So, and then in the larger inset, you can see that, again, where the Home Water Preserve, we have 960 acres, one and a half sections that are managed for wildlife habitat. And since the initial permit was issued, that is primarily used to preserve mule deer winter range, which also has a benefit for a lot of other wildlife species. And you can see a little bit of ownership information. The green is owned by the Land Trust. The dark blue is DNR. We have their ownership. And then the City of Wenatchee in purple on either side of us. And as well, there's some BLM. So a lot of public ground around the Home Water Preserve, and quite a bit of change in recreational activity in the last 15 or so years with regard to trails and trailheads in use. We have additional proposed trails going in, new trails up on Forest Service land, even further southwest of us. So a lot of recreational stuff going on. So with this increase in recreational use in the valley, it's a as you all know, Wenatchee is a very popular area for outdoor recreation, running, hiking, biking. So we're surrounded by this use, and the Land Trust has been asking the district for some additional consideration on the property. And there's been kind of some, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and we finally just said we need to take a larger comprehensive look at this and get a new permit issued with some new use. But that's going to take some time and effort. So it's been a couple of 3 years. COVID slowed things down a little bit, but we've been working on this for several years to put together a consultation package that we send out to the agencies to request this additional use. So we did that in January 2022. We sent the application, well, we actually December of 22, we got the consultation back. And the only real comments we got were to keep the winter closure and to do the rehabilitation that we proposed, because it was the initial consultation package was put together that we weren't going to just give up, just provide more use. There was going to have to be some mitigation. So in December, we got the consultation done. January, we submitted an application to FERC, and lickety split, we had an approval in February. So the approval is conditioned on several items that have to be met in order for us to issue this use, authorized additional use, and that is that the once the conditions are all met, the Land Trust will be allowed additional 4.6 miles of trails that are currently existing on the property, and they will restore about the similar amount of trails, 4.5, 4.6, and that is conditioned on a cultural assessment that has to be done on those areas that will be disturbed, and there's also a requirement from the agencies that we continue this winter closure that we've had for 15, 16 years now. So next steps are this year, the Land Trust expects to go out to get their cultural assessment work done initially, and then that'll have to be reviewed and evaluated, and if there are no concerns with that, they would, in 2023, then start to do some of the rehabilitation work. And once that rehabilitation work is completed, then the district would issue a new permit. At this point, that is expected to be with the Chelan Douglas Land Trust rather than the City of Wenatchee in the 2024-2025 timeframe, just depending on how the Land Trust can get through all the conditions that are required. So with that, I will answer any questions if I can.
Ann?
Thank you, Steve. Hey, hi, Vaughn.
Hi.
So I have a question. I want to go back to the slide, conditions of new permitted use. I didn't quite understand exactly what the responsibility of the Land Trust is to enhance 4.6 miles of existing use and restore 4.5 miles of old road and trails. Can you help me with that?
Sure. So before the district bought this property in 1990 as a mitigation parcel, it was being used for recreation. It had old four-wheel drive roads on it. So there was a history of use in this area, user-built trails, four-wheel drive trails. We have a transmission line access road on the property that actually serves as part of the trail currently. So there are roughly 8 to 10 miles of of single track, dual track, some other, you know, trails, deer trails on this property. 2.1 miles of those were permitted for use and some maintenance. So the enhancement of the 4.6 miles of existing is, these are trails that currently exist, but they could probably use some help to make them a little more sustainable, improve them for safety, that sort of thing. They're also going to do some wayfinding up here, and where we've had a case or two where people have been lost up here, and the EMS has had trouble finding them, and they've had trouble finding their way out, that sort of thing. So there will be some wayfinding put along the trail. So that's part of the enhancement as well, is that there will be authorized use on these trails, and then there will be some signage to tell people where they are and where they can go. The restoration part is, this is our kind of no net loss of the benefit that this property provides us for wildlife. So they're going to actually restore, take out, or improve in some other way some of the existing trails that we believe are not sustainable, that shouldn't be there. They're on ridges, they're in valley bottoms, they're erosion issues, and which is a source for weeds, which degrades the property, which we don't want to have for a wildlife preserve. So they're going to be doing the restoration work. So their responsibility really is all of it. We give them the permit, and they do the enhancement. They do the restoration. And actually, it's the other way around. They do the work, and then we will issue them a new permit.
So the thought is that all this work would be completed before we issue the permit, or then isn't there some ongoing, isn't there agreement for some ongoing maintenance of the trail as well?
Yes. So the conditions for use are that, yes. So the conditions for use is that they need to get a cultural assessment and make sure that we're not going to have any impact on cultural resources. Once they get that and they're good, they're going to do the restoration work. And then the enhancement, probably at the same time they're doing the restoration, it makes sense if they have to do a little bit of trail work to improve some things, they would do it at the same time they're doing the restoration work. So those conditions have to be met. And then once we're satisfied that we have the conditions are met, then we would create a new map for authorized use that we would file with FERC. And that would be, you know, the new permit going forward. And they do have they do have the ability to do trail maintenance. This is, it's theirs to maintain and operate, basically. It's on our property. We need to give them written permission before they do these kind of things. And that was all addressed in the consultation package that we put together.
Yeah, I know they're one part of the group. I know they do a pretty good job of maintaining trails. So we have an open dialogue, ongoing open dialogue with them, and so that sounds good, that we're going to monitor it and make sure that these conditions are met. But then the closure from December until, let me go back, it's December until when?
April 1 to April 1.
It's really hard to close trails and keep people off the trails. So how do we monitor that, or how are they monitoring
so
that?
So actually, through a great partnership with the City of Wenatchee and the Land Trust, so we have trails that pass through our property. They own and operate the trailheads that lead to those, and they close their trails, their trailheads. And it's been through no small part of coordination and effort through the PUD, the City of Wenatchee, and the Land Trust, with outreach annually on a regular basis. And after 16 years of doing this, we have seen a culture of compliance where people are just getting used to the fact that the Sage Hills Trail is closed in the winter. So we close our portion of the trail. We actually post it no trespassing so that we have the authority should we choose to enforce that. The Land Trust and the city has an ordinance on their books that their trailheads are closed dusk to dawn. So during the winter, that takes a lot of it out. And then they just and they have a winter closure. They have a reference to our winter closure in their code. So with the city's help in areas that they manage and the Land Trust help in the areas that they manage and what they do for their outreach effort and us, we've been able to demonstrate, actually, we do winter deer monitoring on the property, and along with that, we record use. And over the last 15, 16-year period, we have seen a decrease in the number of unauthorized users on the property. And we also enlist help from our security staff to educate and inform people when that has to happen.
Yeah. So one last question, Vaughn. So how are the mule deer doing? How'd they winter this year? Although winter's not over, is it?
It was an interesting winter in terms of numbers. We saw lower than average numbers. The trend was pretty similar. But we really, you know, after that Snowmageddon, I believe somebody referred to it earlier, we didn't see deer up there for several weeks. And that's not so surprising to me. There's not much, because of the fires, there's not a lot of shrub component up there. So when you have a couple of feet of snow and they have to paw through to get the grass, and the reality is that not long after we had that snow, it was better at 3,000 or 4,000 feet than it was at 1,500. Yeah. So deer left in February, basically. Mm-hmm. They were not very, in that portion of the foothills, they were gone. But by the end of March, April, when the trails opened, we were back up to reasonably good numbers again. From a relative perspective, the trend was the same, but overall we did have fewer deer on the property this winter, and whether that's a population issue or just redistribution because of the wacky weather, hard to say.
Okay. Thanks so much, Vaughn.
You're welcome.
Lance and Vaughn, thank you. Oh, Gary, go ahead.
I think Dennis had his hand up first. You go, Dennis. I'll go after you.
Well, thank you, Gary. Vaughn, a question I have is, I live just off of Western, and I'm literally looking out my window right now at a hillside west of the canal being carved up for about 250 homes. And my question is, what is our anticipation in terms of the use of that trail system with another 250 homes being built right on the edge of the reserve? That concerns me. And people always shrug their shoulders and moan about the deer eating their arborvitae, but touch their deer and they're very sensitive about that. So, you know, looking at the population encroachment, what are we thinking about in the future?
Well, so we have we have an obligation to maintain this property for wildlife benefit. And through the consultation process, we work with the agencies to get approved some use. And I believe that some managed use is better than an escalating amount of unmanaged use. So, and with having partners like the Land Trust in the city, I believe that we can provide this opportunity. And because the need or the desire for it is growing, it's coming. So we're going to try to manage for that. And we will try to keep the property to in the best possible shape. We'll do our weed control efforts and those kinds of things. But as far as what happens, you know, folks are going to have to endure deer in Wenatchee. They always have. And those that are building further out onto the western portion of it are going to be, that 960 acres doesn't support all of the deer that winter in the foothills here in the winter. They are going to be in other places. And so folks need to be aware of what they're planting and where.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of thinking maybe if we, as these homes open up, if there's not an educational opportunity to share with the new residents, and many of them will be new to the area, the value, or how this property is valued, and how the herd is valued, and please join us in a stewardship, of these valued pieces of property. And just kind of my thought that maybe we could do something proactive to educate people moving into the area that may not have this same educational level or sentiment, and have them help them understand that during the winter, they're going to have deer in the yard eating their shrubs. They might want to think about their landscaping plans.
Yeah,
so, some pots.
Yeah, we have. So we do annually in, say, November, we get out on the radio and we do different spots to inform the public. And this would be a good time to potentially talk about those people in those new neighborhoods to, if they have any questions, and we can provide some more support in that regard to those groups. And I think even when we, I think we'll update some of the signage up there when we issue the new permit, and that would be another good opportunity to provide information to folks on the Hill.
Yeah. Yeah, my thoughts were also maybe we could work with some of the real estate agencies that in the process of transferring a piece of property to new owners, if there might be there's some information on how they can gain access to, information we would want them to have. Just some ways of reaching out maybe differently than we've looked at before.
Yeah, I can look into that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. Good ideas. Gary?
Thank you. And Dennis, actually, yes, is a great segue into your comments. But I've been out on the Sage Hills Trail already this year. Hiked it with a buddy of mine here last week. And beautiful trail, gorgeous scenery. I was able to snap some absolutely fabulous photographs while dodging both the mountain bikers and the masses of people that were on the trail. So as we look at issuing permits, and particularly as we look to perhaps even expanding the trail system, we might want to keep an eye to the future in terms of how do we have mixed use, because we're going to continue to have mountain bikers and hikers and families with little children. And number two, how do we integrate that with our mandate to provide this as a refuge for wildlife? It was truly astounding to me the number of people that were out enjoying the trail that day, and it's a wonderful trail, and I think everybody should get out on that trail and have an opportunity. But it's placing pressure on our mandate, which is to provide it as a wildlife refuge. So I would just ask you to consider that the population base will continue to grow, the use will continue to become a burden to that area, and at some point we'll have to address how does that integrate with what our mandate is, and how can we reduce the number and impact on the wildlife that we purchase this land to protect. So anyway, I urge all of you to go take a hike on it. Absolutely gorgeous, hands down, beautiful. The views back into the city are just astounding.
Yeah, I will say the it's really popular in April and May, and then once it gets a little warmer, it becomes a little less popular. So the shoulder seasons are certainly the high use periods, and we do have a lot more people. But right now, the agencies have told us that this mule deer winter range is the key piece, and through the partnerships we have in the community, we're effectively closing about 3,000 acres of the foothill effectively in the wintertime to protect that habitat. So if we can manage the use and improve the areas that aren't being impacted, then I think we can preserve that wildlife value. There's a people benefit too. People love the wildflower, so we're trying to control the weeds, and hopefully the weather cooperates and we have a nice wildflower season.
Great.
Yeah, the balsam fruit is in right now and it's absolutely gorgeous.
Well, Lance and Vaughn, thank you for the great presentation. That was a lot of learning for me and others, and thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So, Kirk, let's go ahead and move on into item number 7 with Justin and Neil.
Okay, thank you all. Okay, item number 7 is our biweekly Confluence Parkway due diligence follow-up, and we've got Justin Erickson and Neil Naruzzo with us to present what we heard on the outreach efforts.
All right, good morning, commissioners. It's good to be with you. We have quite a bit to share on this biweekly update because, of course, we had our open house and survey just recently. And so Neil and I are pleased to be here and share some results with you. Next slide, please. So this morning we hope to give you a high-level summary of the outreach and the survey responses, and then check in with you to see if you have questions, comments, additional information that we can provide or that we can work with the City of Wenatchee to provide for your next biweekly discussion and update. Next slide, please. So a quick summary of the outreach. We held two workshops at the CTC and had two self-guided trail walks. We had about 100 attendees total. I think we had about 25 on the walks and about 75 that attended in person. So that was a pretty good response. We had an even greater response with the online survey, which ran from March 21st through April 4th, with just under 1,000 responses, about 970 total. That included those that completed the survey and or submitted a formal letter. And we received about 12 letters or emails in addition to the over 900 general responses via the survey link. We got the word out using various means, lots of social media, traditional print and newspaper, and I think it's clear by the response that we did a good job getting the word out. And we also had lots of help from the City of Wenatchee in that effort too. So I'd like to thank them. Also would like to thank them for their participation in those events themselves. They had staff present and were very available. And overall, when you compare the outreach and our response to recent experiences, I think it also shows that we had a high level of engagement from the public. Next slide, please. And one more. I'm going to jump right into the survey results now. So the first few questions are pretty straightforward. Number one, question number one, we asked a question about general knowledge about the project. And about 72% had at least moderate to strong knowledge, so a fair amount of knowledge already in the project. Of course, through our outreach, through the survey, the imagery that we showed as part of that, hopefully we strengthened that knowledge, particularly for those that had initially indicated a minimal knowledge of the project. Question two, next slide, please. We asked a visitation frequency question, and you'll see there that the top two responses were from people that either visited several times a year or several times a month at 33% and 21%. Next slide, please. Question three asked respondents about what types of activities that they enjoyed doing while they were in this in the vicinity of the Grand Natural Area and or Confluence State Park. So probably not a lot of surprise here, but walking, running, biking, wildlife viewing, all very popular activities. And then, of course, we know that swimming and water sports occur, if not directly within those areas, just on the edge. And so there's that interface there, too. So you'll see a fairly high percentage indicated there. Okay, just by way of introduction to these next series of questions, responses four through nine, or questions four through nine, are all associated with reactions to images that were included in the survey. And so what we're seeing here is more detailed responses and observations about specific design elements of the project. What you'll also notice is that numerically the number of responses starts to decrease. So in those first one, two, and three questions, you saw over 900 responses, so totaling near the total number of responses of 970. But when you get into the questions, that's somewhat reduced or significantly reduced because people may have sort of spoken and indicated their sentiment on one particular question and didn't feel the need to reiterate on a subsequent question. So in the lower right below on each of these images, you'll see the numerical number of how many responses, and they range from just under 400 to just over 500. So still very healthy, healthy number of responses. With regard to the image itself here, with the what's shown here is what's called a sentiment analysis. So this is a feature within the survey tool that automates the assessment of comments into three broad buckets, either positive, which is indicated by the green, neutral, which is indicated by the gray, or negative, which is indicated by the red. And so this is a big picture way to help convey how respondents felt and feel and responded to the question and to the image. Although the survey tool takes an initial stab and does this automatically, we have the ability to review each comment individually and to make adjustments to ensure accuracy and adjust the ratings as needed. And that's what we did in this case. We did go through question by question to make sure that these big picture overviews provide a fair assessment of how people feel based on the question. So with that, I'll jump into question number four. Question number four, back one more, please. There you go. Question number four speaks to the overall alignment of the Apple Capital Loop Trail. So it's sort of the biggest picture view and question that we asked. And what you'll see here is that 76% of respondents are positive or neutral about the overall alignment, and 24% with a more of a negative viewpoint. Next question, please. With five, we hone in a little bit on the alignment associated with the Haranarian Confluent State Park. So we asked more specifically about that alignment, and you'll see that the numbers skew slightly more positive. So 80% are positive or neutral about this specific alignment. Question number six. Even more specific, now we're getting into nuances associated with the relocation of the trail from its current location right adjacent to Holly Street to the eastern edge of our property and where our new substation lies. And so an overwhelmingly positive viewpoint is demonstrated here with that relocation. This is actually the highest positive rating of any of the questions, and it's the lowest negative rating at 8%. Next question. Question seven speaks to the boardwalk area and the pinch point. So this is that area just north of Holly Street. You might recall this is where the trail and the roadway are closest together. It's where there's an offset in terms of elevation as well as a proposed sound wall. It is also where the noise increases the greatest for trail users. However, even here, we see that 84% view that image and that proposal either positively or neutral, and 16% negatively. Next slide, please. Question eight spoke to the combined pedestrian bridge. And this one's a little interesting, and I'll spend some time on this. So this one had the highest negative score at 31%, but 69% positive or neutral. I will say that the digital representation that was embedded in the survey, you know, was at a scale that it may have, as we dug deeper into the comments, you'll see maybe a little bit of a misunderstanding in terms of where exactly that relocated pedestrian trail lies, whether or not it's 100% under the new roadway, or if it's actually offset, which is actually the design of the trail. We also did not have the visualization tool that we had available at the open house, and that's now on the website, which is that I think it's a 6 or 7 minute video digital representation of what the user experience is on the trail and on this bridge. So just wanted to provide a little bit more context on this one in particular. Next question. Question nine, we asked about the land exchange. This one is 83% positive or neutral. As we dug a little deeper into the comments here, you'll see some questions about whether or not one-to-one is the right ratio in terms of mitigation, also discussion about that land that we, if this proceeds, and if we were to receive that land as part of the land swap, what kind of additional enhancements could be made for habitat and wildlife. Slide. So the next couple of questions here don't lend themselves to sentiment analysis because they're big picture, open-ended questions, and they also, we were not asking respondents about their reactions to a specific image, so there was no image. So in the first question here on question 10, we said, what other types of design features would you like to see on the trail? And so what we did here is we just pulled out items that we thought were really common that we heard as we went through these individually. So questions and comments about signage and restrooms and safety and addressing safety and issues as they relate to homelessness and camps and those sorts of things. Next slide, please. And question 11 was the most open-ended of all of the questions, which was simply, do you have any other comments you would like to share with the board? And you'll see that we got comments certainly directly related, mostly directly related to Confluence Parkway and mitigation efforts, but we also got comments, you know, completely unrelated, like fiber or something along those lines, because it was so open-ended. But specifically with regard to the proposal at hand, we got comments about noise, looking at additional mitigation, higher barriers, and again, some safety concerns. Also an appreciation for some of the nuances with the design, some of the viewing areas, rest areas, some of the aesthetic components that have been incorporated. There was also a fair amount of appreciation for the effort to seek the input and to hold the survey and the open house. People were appreciative of the outreach. The last question of the survey was, we just wanted to try to understand where we were getting responses from. Probably not much of a surprise here, the vast majority, 83% from Wenatchee and East Wenatchee, but it was good to have the data to really support that. And then about 5% from Cashmere and Leavenworth, and 7% from all others. And when you look at that other category, it's made up of about 12 other zip codes, so it's there's really nothing that stands out or that is dominant. It's just a variety of other zip codes, primarily in the two county area. All right, so that's the end of the formal presentation. I wanted to pause at this moment and see if you had any questions or comments, reactions about the survey, and then segue from there into any informational requests that you may have, with a particular emphasis on mitigation and safety measures that you might be thinking of or that you would like us to explore more as we continue down this path and continue our conversations with the City of Wenatchee.
Justin, thanks for a great presentation. And just reminding our audience, as commissioners, we are reviewing the efforts on the Confluence Parkway at each of our meetings. And this is our due diligence, and we continue to do our work. So staff, thank you very much for the presentation. Just a couple thoughts from myself, and then I'll open it up to others. I was pleasantly surprised at the response on the knowledge of the project, the general knowledge that people had. That seemed to be high. The usage of the park, that was interesting to me. Good usage. Surprised at the high numbers of people that use it. How many times a year or monthly? I just, you know, that was a good reinforcement for me. I found it interesting that of the concerns that were brought forth, that there was concerns about the bridge and the walkway, and you addressed that with the visuals. And then I also thought it was interesting the pie chart on the participation was very high on those who were mostly impacted on it from Wenatchee and East Wenatchee. So good representation all over the county, but really, really high participation by the very local folks that are there. So very, very good presentation. So I'm going to stop there. I've got a few more comments, but commissioners, any other thoughts, questions, directions? Gary?
Thank you, Steve. I just actually have a question. Where are we on acquiring a noise study that would measure engine and exhaust noise rather than just tire noise?
So we have not engaged a consultant to provide conduct any additional analysis. So that if that is something that the commission would like, we can explore that further. You know, we have had some we have done some due diligence in terms of looking at additional consultants that could also just simply review existing work and provide analysis and comments.
I would, in terms of being thorough, I would like to know what the true impact to noise is. I'm reminded that not every vehicle will be a Tesla, and so I don't really have great faith in the study that would only measure tire noise. I would really like to know what the exhaust noise is. What does a truck sound like? It's going to be different. When somebody rides their Harley, what's that going to sound like? And will it have an impact? I mean, it just strikes me as if the study doesn't accurately measure the impact of noise, then the entire noise study would be questionable to me.
So, Gary, I've got a question for you. One of the concerns that we saw, so this is a process question. Of the takeaways that, at least from this initial data that Justin provided, it appears that I think I'd like to dig into that data a little bit more for our next meeting and get what are the top priorities of concerns that came out of that, and along with our concerns, and see how they match up. And then those are the things that we would then take back to the city for further dialogue. For example, we saw in the survey from community members that noise is an issue. And we as commissioners have had those concerns. So how do we then engage with the noise consultant to get additional data, or how do we then start mitigating for noise? And then from that further discussion, then deciding we're still not satisfied with those answers, and do we need to have additional study? Am I making any sense there? That I'd like to come back with kind of our list along with a combination of the survey and really start honing in on what our concerns are, and then how we present those, and then how do we discuss that further down? How do we get those questions answered further down the road? Is that making any sense to anybody?
I might add here just a couple of pieces, and I'll just say our hesitation for performing the noise study was And we tried to include in the questions, the responses to the questions, that the consultant had indicated that average vehicle types were considered in terms of the noise study, noise from average vehicle types. So there is some consideration in there. The other question that we had was related to the information we got from our wildlife experts, indicating that there was anecdotal evidence that the wildlife would adapt accordingly. And so I think our concerns with performing a noise study was, what exactly are we trying to learn from the study, or what question are we trying to answer? And so I think from what I hear Commissioner McKenna saying and the concerns that Commissioner Arsenault have, it would be good to have that discussion in terms of where do we have as information, and what are we missing that would drive us to some type of a decision or a request from the city. So I do think it would be important for us to really understand exactly what we'd be looking for and what the merits of a noise study would be, in addition to what's already been done.
And I think by going back to the city and saying, rather than us take off with our own study, just, and that may come about again, but we know that noise is a concern, whether it's tire noise or road noise, equipment noise. It's been addressed by the public as a level of concern. So does it need to be studied further? Even if it doesn't, what mitigation can be improved to show the public that we're doing everything we can possible to mitigate that noise? For example, the noise coming over the bridge, what more can be done on that bridge to mitigate the noise that comes out over the park? And what noise, and what can we do to mitigate the concerns by our customer owners on the quality of the experience, which noise, safety, and comfortableness. We heard a lot about that bridge attachment and how wonderful the existing versus the experience that they have going over the river now. So I think it's safe to go back to the city and say, here's what we're hearing, here's how we feel, what more can be done to mitigate that? And that may include more study, it may, Gary and Ann.
So I would just like to seek clarification. Not all noise is equal.
Right.
And what the noise engineer told me when I called him and we had a conversation was that his study only measured tires on asphalt. It did not measure engine noise or exhaust noise. To me, engine noise and exhaust noise could be louder, but until we find out through a study, we don't certainly know that. So that is the root of my conversation. Going back to the engineer and just asking him more about the study he did isn't going to address my concern.
Right.
You have to address real life concerns, real life noise.
Right. And we have the data from our customer owners that say they're concerned about noise. So let's go back to the city and say we're concerned about noise, not just tire noise, but equipment noise, engine noise, and how's it going to be mitigated? And so, Ann, you're next.
Thank you. So if we're going to do outreach, and it's important that we do outreach, we need to listen to our customers and be responsive to our customers. There's a lot of outreach done, not by the PUD. I think we do it very well now, but there's a lot of outreach done that's just done for going through the motions, but then nothing seems to come of it. So I just think we have to be really really careful and really, really responsive to what our customers are saying. If only 24%, I don't remember the numbers exactly, only 24% are concerned about noise, we need to address that. I mean, not necessarily, I don't mean to say address. We need to hear what they say and then take the appropriate response. I don't know. The other thing is I've walked the trail. I'm sure all of you have. And I've walked the trail in the afternoon when there's, you know, when there's, you know, when there's more noise. And it not only affects wildlife, it affects our people, our folks walking the trail. More than likely will somewhat change that experience for our customers. So, let's be responsive to our customers' concerns.
Dennis? Thanks, Ann.
I guess I'm going to be a little bit more blunt. I have heard repeatedly from my fellow commissioners and from the public at least three times that there is interest in a noise study that deals with engine noise and exhaust noise. I don't think the request can be any more blunt than they have been. But yet it just seems to get passed off that we're going to look at the tire noise study that was done, and that's going to suffice it. And you can tell by my voice tone, I've had it with that. I don't care if we pay for it or the city pays for it.
Mm-hmm.
This commission is asking administration to conduct a study. Let's get it done and put this to bed. The public is asking for it. It couldn't be more blunt from two sources. And if we're going to respond to the public and if we're going to respond to the commission, let's get the thing done. Hire a consultant, get the study, get the information, whether we agree with it or we don't agree with the results of it, we need to conduct the study. I can't be any more blunt with that, and I just want to let you know I have completely run out of patience with not getting at that issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a singular issue that rises to the top every time and goes to the bottom every time. I'm done with it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Dennis. I guess my point is, and I'm not disagreeing, I think what I'm trying to do as your board president is to walk through a process of moving this forward, whatever the outcomes
yes.
are. And what I'm suggesting is that we're taking now, we've taken the step of reviewing the study, we've gone out to the public, we've listened to them, and they told us that they're concerned about noise. So we now need to turn that back to the city and say, come back and talk to us about that. What are the mitigations? And these are the, and we believe there's more data to be had. That could be either the project, people, city taking that on, or it could be us. But what we're saying is that we want to move this forward. We're concerned about it. And
for me, to resolve the issue tells us that we have adequate mitigation or we need to increase our mitigation, which are significantly impending. That's a significantly impending issue. And we can't address that issue until we have the data that we're requesting.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I don't care who pays for it.
Right.
Let's get the information.
So, Ann?
Oh, you want me to jump in here?
Yes, please do.
Now, Steve, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate you working us through the process. I personally do not want to go to the city and say, will you do another noise study? Mm-hmm. I want to be the organization. We're calling for the noise study, and we probably need to pay for that noise study, and I don't think there's any I don't think any of us are going to have an issue with paying for another noise study, but I do not want it to be initiated by the city. It needs to be initiated by the PUD.
It's our customers that are requesting it.
Right.
We need to respond to them.
So I guess that what I'm trying to also facilitate is to give the appropriate direction to Justin and Kirk. I think we're all in agreement that based upon the feedback that we have from our customer owners and from ourselves, that there are concerns regarding noise and it needs to be addressed. Whether they pay for it, we pay for it, we need to move forward and have that dialogue with the city. Can we all agree on that?
No.
I still don't understand I still don't quite understand, Steve, what your approach is. I think Dennis and I are saying, let's initiate it. We don't need to go to the city and say, is it okay if we do this? We're going to do this, right? We're going to do this. This is our property. We own it. These are our customers. If
right.
we, in response to our customers, if we want to do a noise study, that's what we need to do.
Yep. And I don't want in any way, shape, or form the insinuation we're going to go out and shop for a sound engineer that supports what we're thinking. Because I'm not sure what we're thinking in terms of all five of us. However, we need to get a bona fide person with high credentials, do our own study, and rely on that to then make the request to the city for mitigation or to accept the mitigation that's being provided. I think it's a pretty clear path.
Okay.
And I just think we need to get on that path and get it done.
Okay. Gary, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Steve, and I appreciate your leadership and your guidance trying to bring us forward here. I will say that from a confidence level, I feel that we need to hire our own sound engineer, and we need to be sure that we explain to the engineer what we are wishing for in terms of go stand next to Wenatchee Avenue, document the type of vehicles that use it now, and the sounds that you hear from exhaust and engine and all the things that you, Harley Davidsons and whatever else you're going to hear, that's the sound we want the study to chronicle.
Okay.
I feel more confident that we're able to get results that all of us can agree to.
Okay. So let me paraphrase this as direction for Justin and Kirk. We're going to do two things. One, we're going to be notifying the city via this open public meeting of our efforts and results from our hearings. So we're going to do that. And in that, we are going to be sharing with them that, and I want staff, because these we have been in a partnership with various groups to work on this project, whether people agree with it or not. So we need to notify them of our level of concern. And we have addressed that before with them. And then secondly, we are going to direct Kirk and Justin to move forward with a noise study that addresses our concerns and the concerns of our customers, and we're going to do that on our own. Are we all in agreement with that? That direction.
Question.
We're going to do, yes, Randy.
Trying to formulate what I'm thinking. I'm supportive of the direction we're talking about in a context, and the context is going to be important because. I'm assuming that we're going to increase the noise down there. And I'm assuming there's going to be some mitigation. I mean, I'm assuming the roadway is going to, increase the noise, and there's going to have to be, and they've already proposed some mitigation. The level of mitigation that was proposed was taking in additional noise into factor. I think the study we're talking about, if we have come up with a study and say, yep, you're going to have increased noise, what are you going to do about it? The context matters. And, you know, then we're put in a position of saying to the city, we need you to do more. And we get into this negotiation of bang for the buck, if you will. If they put up a 10-foot barrier rather than a 5-foot barrier and it costs several million more, and then you have to bring in the wildlife biologist that Kirk was talking about a few minutes ago and say, you know, they may very well say wildlife adapts. Okay, how do you factor that into the noise then? Wildlife adapting. So I think we have to look at a bigger picture than just a noise study. I hope that, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to throw a wrench into this, but I think the noise study has to be in a context. And what is the context we're asking for? Not just standing by Wenatchee Avenue and hearing the trucks. How's that really going to impact the wildlife? Seems like that needs to be part of the conversation.
Okay. And we're also hearing, in as part of the context of levels of concerns on the project, that we're also talking about the context of the people that use, the humans that use
yes. The
pathway, and how to, what will actually be the sounds, not just the road sounds, but the vehicle sounds, and how can those be mitigated properly? And I think by having the data that Gary's talking about, it's not just road noise, but with the vehicle noise, et cetera, how is that mitigated so that the people and the animals that are using the parkway can use it, continue to use it and be comfortable out there? So, Kirk and Justin, are we giving? Oh, Ann.
So I just want to say, tag on to what Randy said. Yes, we need to do this in a bigger context. It's not just about, and it certainly is about the road noise, but it's a bigger context in terms of everybody using, who uses the trail and how they use it and where they use it. And I believe that the mitigation that the city is working on right now is based on the assumptions of, certainly some of it is based on the assumptions of that noise study. So it does need to be a much larger context, and even the assumptions that were made, we heard what the one or two wildlife experts said in terms of the animals adapting. I'm not a wildlife expert, but I've spent a lot of time out in the wild places, and I question the assumptions there. So I want to see a broader context.
Okay.
In terms of this whole study.
Yeah. May I add one more thing?
Yes, Dennis.
While I'm beating this thing to death. Commissioner Smith has, in our conversations, has made, and with your permission, Randy, has made a point that I think is very valid. We have received incredible, well-worded and large amounts of information from other agencies in the area that are encouraging us to move forward with the parkway. And I don't disagree with that. But the piece that has kind of been missing is the outreach to our specific customers. And we have, I think, really worked hard at reaching out to our customers and getting their opinion and their input. And what was presented, you know, today, in your study, really says clearly to us, probably the overriding concern is the noise issue. And that's not coming in letters to us from other agencies in the area. It's coming to us from the customers that we serve. And, you know, we have a small part, really, in this decision. And we need to be very cognizant of where we are with the other agencies in the area and understand all of those connections. Our highest obligation is to the people that own it, and that's our customers. Mm-hmm. And what are they asking us to do? And they're asking us to do exactly what Commissioner Congdon and Arsenault are asking for. And so please understand the angst in my voice is based on I don't see us reaching out to our customers and responding to them the way that we normally do. And I'm asking us to get back on track in this issue and take a look at that. I'm confident in our staff's ability, our wildlife people, to assess noise and its impact, et cetera. But they have to have, they're responding to the data they have, not to the data that they may get. Mm-hmm. And one last thing, my wife and I will drive over a half a mile to get on the canal bank to walk. When we're one block away, half a block away from a wonderful sidewalk on Western Avenue, and the reason why we go to the canal bank is two things, exhaust and traffic noise. And we avoid that like the plague. And I don't think we're necessarily unusual human species. I think that's going to be important in terms of how our customers value what it is we're responsible for as a commission. And again, thanks to everybody for tolerating my intolerance and allowing me to think out loud about what's important to me.
And just a second, Ann, I'll be right with you.
That's okay. You know, you're good.
I just want to reinforce exact in coming off of what Dennis said. Dennis, your words of your frustration or intolerance or whatever words you're using are okay because we have agreed that we are going to be setting up a very safe environment in a public meeting for us to have some very frank conversations and feel safe in doing that. And so I appreciate everyone here in creating that safety where we can listen to our customers and challenge each other to really question, are we really listening to our customers? And I think I want to commend all of you for doing that today. So I want to reinforce that because I'm going to keep pushing for that. So I'm going to go back to Ann.
Thank you. So Dennis said, and very importantly, that what we are doing is responding to our customers. That's our role. Our role is also to protect our assets, to safeguard our assets. And that's right up at the top of our fiduciary responsibility. And our parks and our trails are our customers' second most important assets. They love their trail. They love their natural areas. So that is our role. And we do play a big part in this. This is our property, and we need to protect it. The other thing I want to say, I appreciate the constructive criticism from the folks out there. I understand their frustration that it seemed like 4 years went by, and then all of a sudden we all are jumping in and saying, but wait a minute. I think we all wish it had gone down differently, that the process had been different. We didn't really see or feel the opportunity to engage. There wasn't really, I guess it's legal speak, there wasn't an on-ramp. Didn't it seem to be an on-ramp or an off-ramp? When we did have the city come to us, then we jumped on it. But I just want to explain to the folks out there that we weren't shirking our duties. I don't believe we were. We just didn't have the inroad. We didn't have the on-ramp for us to, and we weren't,
totally, I wasn't totally aware of how far this had gone down, that, you know, how far the train had gone, how far it had left the station. So appreciate the constructive criticism from everybody. But, yeah, we're jumping in here now and doing everything we can to do our due diligence, as right. We should.
Thank you, Ann. Randy?
Thank you.
Yeah. As a follow-up to something Dennis said that I think, you know, this is that context that I keep talking about. One of the things in the survey that we got that leapt out at me that was, I think, critically important was how much the people appreciated a huge segment of the trail getting moved off of Holly Street.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the trade-off of what we're talking about is this trail going back into the wildlife area. And yes, there'll be a short segment, assuming it gets approved, that will be aligned with the new parkway, but it won't be right next to it like all those walkers and joggers and bikers right now on Holly Street. So it's trade-offs. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the context.
And Randy, I think the data would show that the fours and against, you know, that's the data that we heard from people face-to-face that, you know, there are pluses and minuses to this, and we need to do everything we can to mitigate and protect, you know, protect noise, protect our animals, protect the parks. But also we've got some issues to help improve transportation. And how, you know, it was for myself listening and spending the days and visiting with people and listening to our customers, I got a good, strong direction from that. We're in this. We've got a lot of work to do, but we need to keep trying to mitigate and make this work because that's what people are telling us. So, Gary, I'm going to move to you.
Thank you very much, Steve. And you know, we've had some really good comments here, and things that Randy and Dennis have said, very thought provoking, and give me great pleasure in being able to ponder them going forward. One thing that I really would like to do is two things, actually. One is address Ann's comments earlier, and that is, you know, late date for the PUD commissioners getting involved. And I will say that actually the PUD commissioners were involved some years ago, back when the city initially proposed taking out the entrance into Confluence State Park. And commissioners pushed back on that and said, no, if that's the where you want to bring it through, we're not interested in doing that. And as a result of that, the city realigned itself. But it also went dark for a period of time after that we didn't get to make comment. So that's one. The second thing is my intention here is to vote in a manner that the ratepayers and the customer owners tell me to vote. But I will not have any confidence if the data is suspect. And throughout this entire process, and Justin and Kirk, I mean, we did a survey. The survey came back with results that were based on what I would say are suspect noise levels. Would those results be different if the really true actual noise would have been used in the survey? So I'm conflicted. I want to make sure that as we move forward, and I've heard that we will come up with actual noise. I'm reminded of the old saying, the garbage in, garbage out. I want to make sure that the data that we have, the data that our customer owners are making comment on, is as accurate as humanly possible. And then at the end of the day, whatever our customer owners tell us to do is what I intend to do. But I will be a real prickly pear up until the point in time I'm confident that the data that they're making their requests on is accurate.
Thanks, Gary. Ann?
Yeah, I agree. So so that's why I said the assumptions. I'm not sure the assumptions that all of this survey was based upon are accurate. So we need to make sure they are. The other thing I want to say is that this is not an easy thing to push back on. As somebody mentioned, we have all of the pillars of the community in the chamber and the downtown association and all the organizations and some legislators all supporting this. And I understand it. I understand there's a need, but we just need to open our ears and our eyes and listen and accept what we hear from our customers, because it's not easy. It's not easy to push back in a situation like this against all of this that's come before. So we need to make it comfortable for them to tell us how they really feel and provide really good, accurate assumptions. That's all I'm going to say. Sorry. Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And, we've talked about the political snowball. We've talked about the finances coming up available much sooner than anybody ever predicted. And we as a commission are going to be together. We are just going to do our job. Just like Ann said, we are going to listen to our customers and we're going to do our due diligence. I appreciate the fact that Gary's been pushing on the data. And I think we're all clear that hopefully Kirk and Justin, you're able to hear what we're struggling with, what we're summarizing, and that we need more data. We need to let the city know we're still working on it and to share the data that we've collected, and that we need to collect further data, get more clarity, and continue discussions on mitigation. Did I summarize that correctly? Any addition? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's clear for us. I think one thing we'd want to do is make sure that the scope of the noise study is very clear to the board. That's been the difficult part, is not really, but this discussion has helped a lot in terms of what I hear loud and clear is we're looking for a decibel, a true, what we think, more accurate reflection of the decibels we can expect. And then, so we'll craft a scope of work that would identify that, and then I think we'll work with you, Commissioner McKenna, in making sure that that's accurate, and go out and do what we can in terms of getting the best partnership on a study put together and the data for the noise in particular.
Great. Thank you. Okay. At this point, I would like to open it up to public comment before we close for lunch. Rebecca, do you see anybody out there that's listening or wanting to address the commission today?
I see a few phone numbers that look external, but I haven't heard anyone speak up or see any digital raised hands.
Okay. I'm just going to give it a few seconds. We've got a couple minutes before we end here today, before we recess for lunch. I'll just give this a minute for people working with technology that would like to address the commission. Okay, hearing none. That was a very great conversation. A lot of hard work went into that. I think we came together with some direction for Kirk. And at this time, we will recess for lunch and come back at 1 p.m. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and welcome to April 18th, 2022 session of business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. if you could please mute your screens and any other devices you have, that would be helpful. We welcome public comment and input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please physically raise your hand and keep letting me know that you would like to speak, or raise your hand electronically via our Teams tools to be recognized. When you are recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Before we start the consent agenda, I would just like to express my gratitude to my fellow commissioners. And as we move forward with Confluence Parkway, and I just appreciate, I want to reinforce what we did this morning. Even though we've had one commissioner who's been pushing for a sound study, or maybe more, we as a team have never come together and said, that's actually the step we're going to do or how we're going to do that. We did that today. And by doing that, we then provide direction to Kirk to give direction to his staff on what to do. So thank you for keeping on me, pushing me to kind of push you. And as we move forward with this, you know, I just want to remind everybody that that's what we're doing. We're having those crucial conversations. We get some agreement on the direction that we need to go as we take our efforts to listen to our customer owners and give direction to Kirk. So I think we accomplished that well, and I just wanted to reinforce that process with my fellow commissioners today. And I don't know if anybody has anything they want to say on that. I just wanted to tell you thank you for pushing me, and I will continue to process, be the process driver on this project. And we're going to look at data. That data is going to, from our customer owners. We reinforce that today. Regardless of what political snowball pressure we're feeling, we are going to use data to make our decisions, and we are going to do our due diligence, and we are going to move forward with a very detailed due diligence process. So, commissioners, thank you for your patience with me and working with me. All right, with that, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
Would Mr. Chairman, I...
Go ahead, Ann. Go ahead.
all right, I'll move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Who second?
Randy.
Randy. Thank you, Randy. We have moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Giving none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? There is none. Motion is carried. Kirk, would you like to present the regular agenda resolution number 15, please?
I'd be delighted to. Resolution 15 is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for the supply of distribution and transmission pole bid number 21-24 and authorizing the supply of the distribution and transmission poles to be obtained by negotiation. With us in the boardroom are Lyle Moore and Mark Belton. I'll slide my computer over so that you can see them.
Thank you. Mark Belton from Procurement and Contract Services. And as stated, we're looking to have this resolution passed to reject all bids and negotiate a contract for supply of our distribution and transmission poles. We opened bids on March 23rd, and three bids were received. One bid from Bell Lumber provided a bid that did not meet our specifications and included material exceptions to our bid. We received a bid from Stella Jones Corporation, one that exceeded the engineer's estimate by 29%, and one that did not meet our specifications and also included material exceptions to the bid. Due to the critical nature of this procurement and the pending expiration of our current pole contract, we're requesting to negotiate a contract to obtain our distribution and transmission poles.
So with that, this is Lyle Moore, Supervisor for Customer Service Engineering. We do have a high degree of confidence that we can negotiate a bid with Stella. If we look at the bid they submitted, they called an alternate, that had the changes, bid specifications, terms and conditions that do not meet our needs, we're confident that we can negotiate through those and get costs for our poles for distribution and transmission that are similar to what we anticipate, that is more reflective of what the current market is. Open that up for any questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Okay. I'm getting some reverberations. Rebecca, anything I can do to help?
You might want to try turning your volume down a little. We're not hearing anything in the boardroom.
Okay.
Yeah, I was hearing it.
Okay, I turned my volume down. Commissioners, is there a motion to accept resolution number 15?
Would move we accept resolution 15.
I would second.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion on resolution number 15? Hearing none, all those in favor of resolution number 15 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Let's move into manager items. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Five items today for manager items, and the first one I'd like to ask is Ryan Baker if he could provide an update on the parks reservation system.
Awesome. Thank you, Kirk. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ryan Baker in the Parks Department, Parks Manager. Here today to talk about the Park Reservation System. Our Park Reservation System handles about 2,000 shelter reservations on an annual basis. It also helps us book our 46 campsites at Phoebe Bridge Park from April until October. On March 1st of this year, we opened up the first of three reservable time slots at Phoebe Bridge. We had a total of 292 transactions, and Memorial Day weekend actually sold out in about 3 minutes. So you had to be kind of fast to get a spot up there for Memorial. And this would be the bookings from April 15th until June 15th. The campground opened last Friday. We had 26 reservations, and only about half of the folks made it to the campground with all the crazy weather that we've been having. So the next big date for us is May 3rd. And that's to open up our campsites to reserve from June 16th until August 15th, that is. You may recall we had to implement this approach due to the high internet volumes we had, as well as as many calls that we received that caused our system to crash last year. Also worth mentioning would be the implementation of a call tree to help those large call volumes, as well as two additional contractors on site that can help in the campground. This past weekend and today, we're welcoming some of our Canadian friends we haven't seen in a couple years because the border's been closed, so it's good to see them come down and enjoy the campground. Some of the positives, we are balancing on a daily basis now, which is great. We've not had any complaints about our discounts or rates. They remain the same. And as a whole, our system has not gone down and crashed like I mentioned before. So overall, starting out very well at BB, and excited to have a great campground season up there. So with that, any questions from the commission?
Commissioners, questions for Randy? Ann?
Thank you. Hi, Randy. Hey, Ryan.
Starts with an R.
Hey, just a comment. I drive by the BB Park all the time, and it is so beautiful. They do such a terrific job maintaining it, and actually that's true with all of our parks. It's just, you just don't go anywhere and see these kinds of beautiful, green, lush, well-tended parks on a gorgeous river. It's just mind-boggling, really. So thank you. Job well done. And all your team, especially your guys out there that are actually, you know, please pass the comment on to the guys that are out there mowing the lawn and weeding and, you know, doing all the work.
Well, we certainly appreciate those comments. Last week, we weren't sure what to do, whether we should run the snowblower or the lawnmower. So thanks for those comments.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. You have to be nimble.
There you go.
Great. Thanks, Ryan, for the update.
Thanks, Ryan. Next item, I'd like Tracy Yunt to share a new employee that will be joining us soon.
Thanks, Kirk. Good afternoon, commissioners. As you know, Sean Seaman retired after a great career here at the PUD, and I wanted to share that his replacement in the Government Affairs Program Manager position is Kelly Scott. Kelly has a background as a congressional aide, consultant. For several years, she was the editorial page editor at the Wenatchee World, digital director and columnist. And then most recently, she was the Central Washington manager for Congresswoman Kim Schreier. Some of the things that she did in that office really revolved around public power issues, forest health, water-related issues, including the Columbia River Treaty, Snake River Dam removal, and just hydropower advocacy. So we're really excited for Kelly, and she'll be starting on April 25th, where she will be digging in right away to getting us ready for the next state legislative session. So when she gets on board in the office, we'll bring her in front of you and let her say hello.
Looks like thumbs up. Thanks, and applause, Tracy. Tracy. Thank you, Tracy.
Tracy, does she have any idea who she's working with?
We tried to keep that out of the whole hiring process. That's why we were so lucky there.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Next item, we've got Dan Frazier, who's going to provide an update on the Fifth Street request for proposal process. Dan?
Thanks, Kirk. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. It's been a few months since we talked about the Fifth Street redevelopment project, so I wanted to give you an update. Also, what's happened just recently on the project, including what's happened over the last couple months. So the Port Authority and the district have been partnering on this project for a couple of years now, honestly. But we issued the request for proposals on March 3rd, got some good feedback, got some good interest. We had tours on March 23rd and March 30th. And during one of those tours, we did have a question from one of the developers that wanted to know if we would consider adding some time to the process to help develop proposals. And although we didn't get a direct request at the time from anybody to do so, we did receive some interest, some late interest, just last week. Early in the week, we had three additional developers contact the port and asked if they would consider extending the due date for those proposals. They were originally due on the 14th. After internal discussions with Justin and Kirk, Eric, and Charles, we decided that it would be in the best interest of the district and our customer owners to seek that additional
interest and try to run it down and see if there's something there. So we issued an addendum last Wednesday, extending the date to April, to May 16th. So May 16th is the new request for proposal due date. Subsequent to that, I talked to the port again last week and late in the week, and they actually had another developer contact them late in the week. So I think it was a little delayed in getting lots of interest. I don't know what the reason was, if it was just a very busy period in early spring, but we there was an article that was run in the Seattle Daily Journal of Commerce talking about the Chelan-Douglas area and how economic development is kind of booming in this area in terms of commercial and residential development. I think that definitely helped get the word out about the project and about the opportunity. So the new date is obviously May 16th, but we also added another tour, and we're going to have a tour for prospective developers on April 28th. So we hope to see some additional interest in the project. I think not a lot of opportunity to make this big of an impact in a downtown with this large of a parcel. When the port let me know of a few of the proposed developers that they've been talking to, they're doing a lot of projects very, very similar, this 5 to 10 acre redevelopment project. So I think we have some really good interest. We definitely think it's in the best interest of customer owners and the downtown to get every opportunity for people to propose on the project. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We're expecting to see some additional questions come up through the process, and we'll let you know if anything changes, but planning on seeing those May 16th. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. I've got two more items that I'll cover. One of them was just to let you all know, I know you know, but let the public know that during the special meeting, the last meeting, April 11th, we had an error on the resolution that had a date of the collective bargaining agreement going through March 2024. That should have been March 2025. It was a three-year agreement, so that has been corrected. And then second, just been speaking with you all in terms of trying to figure out a target for trying to return to in-person board meetings, and I think I'm hearing the sentiment that there's a transition period that would be appropriate, and thinking that a two-month transition would be appropriate, and that we would be kind of targeting the second meeting of June for those in-person board meetings, which we would still allow participation by board members remotely on top of it. And just as long as the emergency proclamation is in place, we would also still allow the public to participate remotely as well. And at that point in time, it would be either participate in person or remotely for members of the public. So let me know. I think we can call that a tentative target. And let me know if you have any concerns whatsoever with shooting for that. It can always be modified and adjusted along the way. And that's all I have for manager items.
Commissioners, any comments, questions for Kirk? Okay, moving on into commission items. First item is to look at our board meeting schedule to accommodate the APPA National Conference, change our schedule around. So, commissioners, do I have a motion to reschedule our two board meetings as followed? May 31st. Meeting would move to June 6th, and our June 13th meeting would move to June 20th. Do I have that correct, Kirk?
You have that correct.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to reschedule two board meetings as follows. May 31st, 2022 meeting would be moved to June 6th, 2022, and the June 13, 2022 meeting to be moved to June 20, 2022. All meetings will be held at the 10 a.m. in the headquarters room, 327 North Wenatchee Avenue, Wenatchee, Washington, unless further modified by future board action.
Do I have a second?
Second. Second.
Any discussion on that, commissioners? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And opposed? Motion is unanimous. I have something I would like to share under commission items. Rebecca could put that up on the board. I had a recent tour out at Central Maintenance at Rocky Reach, and it was a fascinating tour. Casey gave that tour to me, and just got to meet a lot of employees who are very thankful to be working in a delightfully new facility. There's some really cool old equipment. I ask about equipment, and I'll tell you about some of the new. But there's some equipment that was originally installed with the dams that are perfect, and they are well-beloved machinist tools that are very old. And if you look at the top left-hand corner, I just realized I didn't bring in my little medallion, but this is, you're probably familiar with the term CNC, computer-aided drafting machine or cutting machine. Well, this is a computer-aided cutting machine that operates with water that shoots an abrasive material through the water and cuts whatever you put in the water at, it cuts that material out. What was fascinating to me is that in times where gaskets for particular pieces of equipment are hard to come by, we can take stacks of gasket materials, put them on top. The machine can cut out numerous gaskets and stock up the gaskets that we need. This machine cuts out all forms of aluminum and any grade of material, and I believe it cuts out up to 3 inches thick material in whatever design. So brackets to be welded onto equipment that need to be lifted up, you name it. Our staff is well trained, and Kirk, you might help me out. Is it Jeremy?
Jared.
Jared, I knew I was going to get that wrong. He's a master at it. He's really invested a lot of time learning how to use this machine, and it was fascinating. Great to see the investment paying off for the efficiency and ability of what our staff is able to accomplish. I was fascinated with the machine in the middle. This is a bandsaw. Metal rolls down the rollers, and the actual bandsaw slides back and forth to cut material. I would love to have something like that. And I also wanted to give you a picture of the office space on the right-hand side. And notice the decorations hanging from the ceilings. The antique insulators, and I'm sure I'm not using the correct terms, but the old things laying out in the boneyard, there's these big hubs that have been infused right into the building of the walls. It's kind of a portal. You can see from one room to the next. They're going to come in and put some special glass in there. There's a water wheel. I mean, the artwork of using old, the history of the PUD is everywhere you go in this building. It's phenomenal. And the workspaces are great. I saw lots of smiles, lots of appreciation. So, commissioners, I just wanted to share that with you because I think it was along with senior management and in agreement with the PUD commissioners that the vision came about to upgrade our facilities for the next 50 to 100 years. And I don't think I've ever been as proud as I was walking around through that building, looking at what's been provided to for our employees. Great support, great buildings. The work continues out there with they're still in the demo phase of the old central machine or central maintenance building. That will be upgraded and modernized. It's quite a sight to behold if you haven't been out there. So I just appreciate Casey giving me a tour and the time that staff gave to me talking about their new equipment and what they were doing with it. So it was a wonderful day, wonderful trip. Commissioners, anything else on your end?
It really seems appropriate to me that somebody should mention what happened last week at the PUD Association meetings.
Yeah.
If I don't miss my bet, I think the new state president of our association is attending this meeting today.
Randy, thank you for bringing that up. So congratulations to Gary. Gary will be leading our statewide organization for the next year.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Randy.
Anything else? Uh-huh. All right. Item 18, Kirk, follow up on delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
Yep, we have three items. One of them was for Gary Rice to provide additional information on security cameras for the North Shore substation, which he sent an email on April 6th on. That was from the April 4th board meeting. Also from the same board meeting, Michelle Smith was going to update the Confluence Parkway questions and responses to include the sources of the answers, and that was included as additional information in today's packet. And then we had a prior item where Rebecca was going to schedule the Rocky Reach facility tours for interested commissioners that Commissioner McKenna spoke about, and so that was completed on April 5th. And I can jump right into the next item if you'd like.
Please.
Delegation of action items from today. We had two of them captured. Justin will follow up with the city on making sure they have the Confluence Parkway outreach results. Mm-hmm. And then Justin and I will work on a defined scope of work for a noise consultant to provide additional information and data on the Confluence Parkway project.
Perfect. Commissioners, was there anything else that we needed to add to that list? All right. Moving on to item 20, additional public comment. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions about any item today. At this time, I will open it up to our public for any comments. And ask Rebecca to help me look for that.
I don't see any hands raised.
All right. We will move on with our agenda. Are there any other matters of general businesses may necessarily come before this commission today? Okay, given none, we will move on. We are going to go into recess at this time for an executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board or is likely to become a party and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 4230-110. We are now in recess.
And I'm going to estimate it'll be approximately 45 minutes.
And Commissioner, should we take, it's 1:30, should we take a 10-minute break and come back? 5-minute break, we're going to come back at 1:35. Thank you very much. We are coming out of executive session. It is March 18th, 2022. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.